Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Patty Vargas, your host for Resilient Women, Agents of Change. And our topic today is Gold Star Parents, Agents of Change. And our leading lady today is Stacey Holly, author and activist. Now, professionally, Stacey is known as an action-oriented business leader and proven collaborator with extensive experience across multiple organizational disciplines, acknowledged for strong management of multifaceted programs, and one who excels in guiding business teams to provide solutions that deliver maximum value focused on enhancing the customer experience. Stacey and I worked together a number of years ago at a company in San Diego, and I got to firsthand observe her leading a large part of the organization through what we called managed services at the time. And I got to work with her and collaborate with her on some large initiatives that the company was undertaking. And that was where we really got to know each other and got to learn a little bit more about one another. And I learned that on November 15th, 2005, Stacey and her husband joined a club that nobody ever wants to join. And so I've invited Stacey to come on and tell us about their experience being Gold Star parents. So welcome, Stacey. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Patty. Thanks for having me on.
I'm super, super happy to.
Great. So I'll just take it from the date November 15th, 2005. It will never our lives were forever changed on that day, and that was the day that my husband answered the doorbell at our home in our home in Post Falls, Idaho, and on the other side of that door were two members of the military, and they were there to regretfully inform us that our son Matthew, our only child, had been killed in action in Taji, Iraq. He had been deployed as part of Operation Iraqi Freedom. He was a medic with the 101st Airborne, the storied Screaming Eagles out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And on that day, he, along with three other young men, tragically lost their lives when the Humvee they were traveling in was hit by an IED, an improvised explosive device. So, that humbly brings you to your knees. Your whole life stops, literally, in its tracks, and you try and make reason of what had happened. And prior to that moment in time, John and I, had been very successful, not only in happily raising a man who felt convicted to serve his country, but also very successful in both our professional lives. And everything stopped that day for like I said, a moment in time. And then you try and figure out how do you carry on from there, again, both professionally and just as members of society.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit more, Stacey, about maybe just in those early days, because it's like walking through a fog, like you're putting one foot in front of the other, but you don't even know exactly where you're going or what you're doing. How did you and John maybe separately get through those first days and weeks, and then how did you work together as a couple?
Separately, the one thing that we were advised of very early on from very dear friends of ours, godparents, we had two sets of godparents for our son, and both sets of godparents just advising us to give each other space and grace, as we call it. We're a very faith-based family, and that space and grace was that each parent, John would grieve in his own way, and it wasn't wrong, and I would grieve perhaps entirely differently, and that wasn't wrong. And to be able to realize that there are many stages to grief, and I must honestly admit that even 13 years later, this November, those stages of grief come and go. They never mm-hmm. really end. There isn't a door that opens and a door that closes. It's not finite. But to be able to give each other that room and that space and that grace to walk this walk of grief, I think that also was something that that pulled us together in many ways. Because Matthew was in the military, we envisioned a certain way that our son would come home to us as his parents, of how his casket would be transported home. And it was shortly after the notification and awareness on the day that we were actually making the arrangements for his funeral that we learned that the way we envisioned Matthew arriving home to honors to his parents was going to be much different. And that difference is really what pulled John and I quickly together. And it was that prior to November of 2005, the military's way of transporting the deceased from a combat zone to their home of record, which in Matthew's case was San Diego. They would transport them to Dover, Delaware. They would complete the identification and preparation of the remains back to their home of record. And in Dover, from the battlefield to Dover, they were treated with utmost honor and respect. And in fact, many of us have seen the pictures of the caskets draped with the flag and the honor guards and things of that sort. But it was from Dover, Delaware to the home of record that was in question. It was much different than we envisioned. And in fact, we were informed at the funeral home that Matthew's casket would be arriving much earlier than they had originally told us. Because of his death being right around Thanksgiving, they had informed us it would be after Thanksgiving that we would receive him home. But they accelerated that pace. And because of that, we inquired as to how that would happen. They informed us that Matt would be arriving in the evening and that his casket would be transported to the freight terminal. And that's where we could either pick him up, or in most cases, the funeral home took care of those arrangements. Well, that was strange to John and I, and actually almost so discouraging. In fact, we have served our nation as well, both my husband and I, and Matthew actually is following in four generations of family members who have served our nation. So we were taken quite aback and really wanted to change that. But didn't know how for our son in that short period of time.
Well, that is so incredibly disrespectful and frankly, unlike what we as Americans come to think of a way to treat our fallen heroes with respect and honor. And yeah, we've all seen the services or the circumstances at Dover, and we've seen the airplane hangars with the caskets and huge amounts of honor and dignity bestowed on them. So that was shocking to me when you told me how Matt would be transferred back to San Diego. It was just a box.
It was very, very discouraging, but you know, I really believe that sometimes things happen at a point in time for a purpose. And every family that follows this journey that we have that's associated with the death of a military, a member of the military service, is assigned what is called a casualty assistance officer. And we were assigned what is called a CACO. And he met us in San Diego when we arrived. And when we found out that the way that Matthew would be brought home, we immediately contacted him. And that gentleman went through hills and valleys and moved mountains literally in the space of 12 hours. He spoke to anybody and everybody that would listen, and he advocated on our behalf. And what we insisted upon was that our son would arrive in San Diego, that we as his parents would be on the tarmac at Lindbergh Field, and that that the only gentleman that would be carrying Matthew's casket off that plane, that commercial airliner, would be his brothers from his unit, the 101st Airborne. And so a rear detachment was brought in from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And that in itself was moving mountains because of the weaponry that they had to carry with them on the planes as an honor guard. And then the commercial airliner, which I'll leave unnamed, refusing to stay landed in Lindbergh because they were a business and they had to load passengers and take off again. And in the space of that 12 hours, we were contacted by Barbara Boxer's office, and my husband had a very firm discussion with her liaison. And his suggestion to them was that they're the government, and they can close, they control the FAA, and they can close the airspace and do as they deem necessary to bring a hero home. And that's exactly what happened. The commercial airliner that said they were a business and needed to take off were grounded. The airspace was closed so that the honor guard from Fort Campbell could come in. And we, as his parents, were met at the gate entrance by a retired brigadier general from the Marine Corps and a retired captain from the Air Force. They knew who we were, and they immediately treated us with the utmost respect and said, "I remember these words so distinctly. A hero's coming home tonight, and we're going to go honor him." And that's exactly what we did.
That is incredibly moving. And what strikes me is, this was a soldier coming home, and he had paid the ultimate price, you know, and given of his life in support of his country and what he believed in. But this was also somebody's son, you know, somebody's son who's coming home. And we often lose track of that when we think of the soldiers, or we refer to them as troops, or, you know, other anonymous type things like that. But those are somebody's sons and daughters and wives and husbands, and they go so we don't, you know, they go and keep us safe here. So I can see what that must have looked like that night. And and I like how you said that John had a very firm conversation with Senator Boxer, because I can imagine one of John's firm conversations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But, you know, I think that actually is the story after the story, because after we were able to receive Matthew home with complete honors and respect and dignity that's due every fallen soldier or airman or Coast Guardsman or a Marine, sailor, any service member who serves our country and gives the ultimate sacrifice should be honored no less than that. And after putting Matthew to rest, we spoke up. And we spoke up to advocate for those families that would follow in our footsteps, the mothers, the fathers, the grandparents, the aunts, the uncles, the wives, the husbands, so many families after us that would follow. And we spoke up, first through the media, and then subsequently by sitting down over a cup of coffee at a Denny's in Southern California with then Congressman Duncan Hunter Sr., who was chairman of the Armed Services Committee. And he himself, soldier, and his son deployed at that time as a Marine officer to the war zone, understanding what we as parents were simply asking the government to do, and that was to rethink mm-hmm. and relook at what they were doing to transport our fallen heroes home. And it was interesting because, you know, what I said early on was it's really nothing different than what I would do in the business world. As a business mm-hmm. leader, it was my responsibility to identify change and ways that we could change the way we were doing business so that we were doing it in a better way, delivering a higher level of service, being doing things faster, you know, more profitably. It was the same thing that we were asking the government to do. Rethink, relook, is there a better way to do this, a more honoring, more dignified way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happened after that, after you started meeting with Duncan Hunter, and what was the next steps?
Surprisingly, and this is what really gets everybody, because we see in the media today where nothing can seem to be done in Washington, D.C., and you have to move mountains and brick walls, et cetera. But, you know, literally that's what we did in the space of that 12 hours. And so we spoke to Duncan about what our wishes were, and he went to work on our behalf. But he didn't just go to work on behalf of John and Stacey Hawley. He went to work, as I stated earlier, on behalf of all those parents that would follow in our footsteps. And his goal was to ensure that somehow, some way, a law would be advocated for at the federal level that would require the Pentagon to change that process. And in fact, that's what was done. In short, in the space of about 11 months, with help from both the Congress and the Senate, a bipartisan approach, they came up with a law that was inserted into the Defense Appropriations Bill for 2007. And in October of 2006, President George W. Bush signed the Hawley provision, named after our son Matthew, into law. And that required the Pentagon that as of January 2007, all fallen members of our service, across all services, would return home to their loved ones, either by military aircraft, by commercial aircraft, or by chartered military service, up to the family members to decide which, return home with an honor guard and the loved ones allowed to be on the tarmac to an airport closest to that home of record. And so, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we never envisioned how many. But to date, over 4,000 family members have received their loved ones home in that way.
You know, if for those of you listening, if you fly, you know, with any frequency, you've probably observed this in action. And I fly back to San Diego quite frequently, and on one particular flight, I was sitting next to a young man who was getting ready to report to MCRD, and which is the Marine Corps training depot. And we're sitting on the plane there, and over the intercom, the flight attendant announced that we were going to be delayed slightly while we brought home a hero. And that was the way that she said it. And from the window, we could see a soldier being received on the tarmac from a plane next to us. And the entire plane stood up and applauded. And I told Stacy about it when I got back to the office, and she said, "Well, you saw the Hawley provision in action." It was the most moving thing I think I'd ever seen. And to be sitting next to a young man who was getting ready to enter the military and begin his military career was the mom and me just couldn't stand it, you know. I put my arm around him and I gave him a hug. And but you, if you fly, you've seen this in action, and I'm just so honored to have the author of that provision on our show here today. Stacy, tell me about the Keith M. Turnham Humanitarian Award. How did that come about?
We were approached by the city of San Diego. Keith Turnham had served on their humanitarian committee for some years. And Keith himself was a service member, World War II. He was a POW. And he at the time that the city of San Diego approached us, Keith himself was battling another battle, a battle with cancer. He was in his early 80s. And they decided that a way that the city of San Diego, could honor Keith not only for his service to our nation, but also for his service to the community, was to give a humanitarian award. And so in early 2008, they approached us about being the first recipients. They had heard our story through the media, and they wanted to honor the humanitarian work that we had done on behalf of Gold Star families. And so in 2008, John and I were given that award by the city of San Diego in the presence of Keith and his wife, Jenny, and of course, Duncan Hunter, who had advocated on our behalf, was there along with a number of state and city officials and our family and friends. And, you know, this journey, as I mentioned earlier, it's a lifetime journey of grief. You don't open one door and close the other. But along the way, we have been both humbled and honored to be recognized not only by other Gold Star families, but by such awards as given by the city of San Diego. And that was what the Keith M. Turnham Humanitarian Award was all about.
Well deserved. So I know that you and John wrote a book about this experience called Medals, Flags, and Memories. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the book, what it covers, and then tell us about your website where people can reach out to you?
Absolutely. The book, first of all, if anybody wants to purchase it, it is out on Amazon. It is Medals, Flags, and Memories. And it's really a three-part story. It's the story of the notification that a Gold Star family goes through and the context around that. It's the story of us advocating for the law. We do, of course, share our hero, Matthew, throughout the book. It also is a book of encouragement, perseverance, about our faith. And then the third part of the book, which is For Another Day in Time, is John's healing journey to Iraq. And he actually went to Iraq as part of a contingent of Gold Star parents just a year after our son was killed in action. He stepped foot on the ground on the hallowed soil that Matthew and so many others have laid their lives down for their fellow man, and for freedom and for peace in this world. And some could argue, you know, six ways to Sunday, whether that was effective or not, but we in our hearts of hearts believe that is the case, that in the long term it will be. And so from that, John and I, so many people wanted us to share our story, and they wanted to share it on our behalf, but we felt that we wanted to share it with from our own perspective, our own emotions. Mm-hmm. And we co-authored the book. It is a very interesting read. It actually received recognition and an award from the Military Writers Association of America, the Founders Award. We are first-time authors, but it is pure realness, if you will, in terms of walking this journey and really helping people understand what Gold Star families are all about, who they are, and what we can do to make a difference in this world, not just what our sons and daughters and loved ones have done, but what we as parents after, as they say, after the bugle call fades, what mm-hmm. we can continue to do to advocate on the behalf of our Gold Star families.
That's great.
So Medals, Flags, and Memories is the website. They go out there, they can go ahead and reach us through that.
That's good. So, folks, if you would like to reach out to Stacy either with invitations to come speak or to share your story with her or ask for, you know, questions about how the provision came about, please reach out to her on the website. They're very interactive. They like to interact with the folks that are walking this same kind of journey. So kind of like to switch gears just a little bit here if we could. I guess the question is, you know, then what? You know, what is the, how did this affect you guys now moving forward? How did you, it's almost like a reinventing of yourself now. Priorities seem to change and what's really important becomes very, very obvious to us. So can you tell us a little bit about that, about how that came about? And I would imagine that it is still evolving and ever changing.
It does. I mean, we were, you know, at the time of Matthew's death, we were in our mid-40s. And as we often tell people, we were at the top of our careers professionally. And your whole world comes to a screeching stop. But the world around you doesn't. And so you have to figure out a way to pick up the as I've often said, the millions of shattered pieces. And put them back together again. In our case, Matthew was our only child. And we wanted to live a life of honor and dedication to our son and to those who serve our nation. As I mentioned earlier, we ourselves are veterans, and so we naturally moved towards supporting veteran organizations or speaking out on behalf of veteran organizations and in certain situations. And as you've shared, because of the book and the way it was well received in many different community environments, we've been asked to speak all over the country, and so and to share our story. And we are open and honest, but we're everyday people. We're people just like everybody else. We just happen to advocate and use our freedom as American citizens to speak out on something that was wrong and to get it corrected. And at the end of the day, every one of us has an opportunity to do that. Whenever we speak, I always share a little piece, and it's a small little piece. Sometimes people think that they have to do something grand and grandiose to make a difference. But sometimes the smallest thing you do in the life of another person makes the biggest difference in your own life. And that would be the real encouragement that I give to anybody, whether you're in the professional business environment, or whether you're volunteering for a local community service event, or whether you're advocating on behalf of something much bigger. Always do it with a heart of giving back. Don't do it with a heart of getting or having the limelight on you. Always do it with a heart of giving back, serving others. And that was a valuable lesson in life we taught our son. Take your eyes off of yourself, put them on to others, and that's where the true reward is.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you doing now? What are, I guess, both professionally, what are you and John doing? And then what are you doing in continually putting forth the message of Medals, Flags, and Memories?
So again, professionally, I've actually taken a step back, as you said, career-wise. I've slowed it down just to pace, but I'm giving back in a different way. I used to be a business leader, very large organizations, as you mentioned very early on, and then transitioning into, kind of a smaller indirect management role, but still collaborating, still driving change within business. And then John is actually retired. He has some medical issues that have led him in that direction, but we still, again, openly share our story as we're asked to slow it down a bit, but we're still out there talking about it.
Yeah, that's great. What kinds of audiences have you spoken to?
Everything from your traditional, veteran organizations to church groups to just general audiences that want to understand a little bit more about how did this couple, change a law at a federal level when our own government can't even seem to sometimes get itself steered in the right direction. So it's just, general audiences. We talk to pretty much anybody that will that wants to know, that is curious.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's really awesome. I know that we met up in San Francisco one day with you and John when you were there to speak at that was a Gold Star Parents Conference, wasn't it?
It was. Every year, the Marine Memorial Club there in San Francisco hosts Gold Star Families in the month of February, and they host us for a 3-day period, and we are in, as I often say, and many of us parents have said, we're in the safest place we can be as Gold Star parents, because we're there with other parents who are in this journey with us and share in our story, but we also are able to share our heroes and heroines with one another, and to embrace this life that we are walking. Even though none of us wanted to be part of this club.
Right. I think that's so important to anybody, going through the loss of a loved one, is finding a safe that you can be with other people who have experienced what you've experienced. Because it's not like any other life change, It's much deeper, and it seems like it doesn't end. It just about
exactly.
The time you think you've mastered something, then mastered some part of your emotions, something just happens that knocks your feet out from underneath you, and that's a hard thing for people to understand who are not walking that journey. They expect you should just get over it, you should just move through it and put it behind you. Well, how do you put behind you the loss of a loved one, and especially the loss of a child?
Exactly. That's exactly it. I often tell people it's one step at a time, one day at a time. And some people may look at you kind of quizzically and go, but it's 13 years.
Yeah.
It's one day at a time, one step at a time. There will be days where, we have pictures of Matthew in our home, and I'll look at a picture and I'll smile. But the very next day I may look at that same picture and I might cry. And the same happens with John, and it doesn't always happen at the same time. It's at different points in time. It definitely gives you a different perspective on the challenges that we all face in life. Everybody faces different types of challenges. The question is when you are brought to your knees, when you're stopped in your tracks, what are you going to do with that challenge? And that's why John and I chose to do what we did. I do want to put out one other point of contact for others too. We do have a Facebook page, the same thing, Medals, Flags, and Memories. If people will go out there and visit us, we post there as well, and they can contact us there as well too.
Great. Yeah, like I said, this kind of a loss is not really like any other kind of loss. And finding that safe place where you can You can rage, you can cry, you can laugh, you can, you know, go through all of those different things. It's just such a healing experience. And the way we grieve is the way we grieve. Every way is right. You said earlier in the show that the way John grieved was different than the way you grieved, and neither one was right or wrong. It was it was just the way that it was done and what was meaningful to you. But I completely agree that when this life-altering thing happens, we do have a choice as to what are we going to do. Are we going to become a victim to this pain and this grief and let it control us, or are we going to channel it into something worthwhile, or at least channel it into a better version of ourselves? You know, like you said, it was humbling. You know, and I can completely relate to that idea, because everything that we go through just increases the fabric of our lives, and the you know, I call it like the texture of our lives, and makes us more compassionate, more empathetic, less proud of ourselves. You know, and that's when we become useful to others. That's when we become more useful to others. I can't think of any other way really to put it.
Sometimes we, especially, and I'm going to come at this from a professional perspective, professional perspective, you know, organizations that we're part of have demands on us. They're employers, and that's understandable. But sometimes we get sucked into the demands of that kind of work environment, and we live it, and that's our world. But outside of that world is a real world. And that real world is a place that your eyes should be on as well. Because, you know, I'll just speak personally from the heart at this point. We have a hurting world around us, you know, and I'm not going to get into all the whys and what fors from my perspective, but I think if we all did a little soul searching, we would see it openly. We have a hurting world around us. And what are we doing to make a difference in that hurting world? Some people are so self-absorbed, so inwardly absorbed, that they can't see what's going on around them. But if they open their eyes up, there's so much opportunity for us to touch the lives of others. And I often think about Matthew. You know, people will question, well, why did he make that decision? And believe me, there were healthy debates in our family about making that. We thought we had done everything so our son didn't have to make that decision, but he did. Mm-hmm. And when I look back, I look at about the conviction and the heart and his choice to be a medic was humanitarian in and of itself. He wanted to help other people. And so to have that aspect of it was just it's just mind-blowing, because, you know, the last phone call we got from our son, and it's in the book, that we tell a story in the book, the last phone call, the Thursday before he died. He died on a Tuesday. We get a call on Thursday. Very early in the morning, we had told him, we don't care what time of day or night, just call us. 1:30 in the morning, our time, the phone rings. This is when you still had the phone in the home, you know. Cell phones weren't really the end thing at that time. And phone rings, dead out of her sleep. Hey, Mom and Dad. It was the most clear voice I'd heard of my son in so long. He was in his element. He was doing something to give back. And you know what his request was? Could you please send some color crowns, boxes of color crowns? I want to teach these kids how to draw. That is the heart of a giver. I want to teach these kids how to draw because I want to give them a sense of freedom that they haven't had. They don't see. And that is the heart I would love our society to get back to, the heart of giving, reaching out beyond yourself and giving back. Not just about how fast can I get up the ladder as a corporate leader, or, you know, how much money can I make, but how can I give back? And again, I tell this often, our story is a story of our faith as well, and that really is the story of faith. It's about taking yourself out of your situation and giving it back. Doesn't mean you don't hurt. Doesn't mean that we won't hurt for the rest of our lives, but it's a way but taking that hurt and repurposing it into the lives of other people.
Yeah. Well, Matthew was certainly doing that. And, you know, to have had a heart for, you know, not just serving our country, but serving those in that country too, is really admirable. And I would imagine brings a great deal of comfort in knowing that he was doing what he wanted to do and believed in so much.
Ultimately, that's our peace, is that,
yeah,
that he was doing what he wanted to do. And I would just add to that, that so many of our service members have that same heart. They just want to make a difference in helping other people have the same kinds of freedoms that we have, that we take, that so many in our country take for granted. Just a little bit of a glimpse of what that's like.
So talking about the other service people, can you tell us who was with him in that Humvee, or maybe some of the stories about the people that were in his division?
That's actually a great question. We, you know, as Gold Star parents, we often are incorporated into the family of the units that our sons and daughters were part of, and no different for John and I. And actually, Matthew was following in the footsteps of his father by joining the 101st Airborne, or actually requesting to be part of that unit. His father also served with the 101st back in the late 70s. And in fact, one of the stories that we share is that after Matthew joined the unit, part of the history of that unit is they are known as the Air Assault Airborne organization. And so you go through the Air Assault training. And I remember distinctly, I was at a conference in Orlando, and John had traveled with me, and we were taking some downtime after the conference, and we were on the boardwalk there in Disney World, I think around the ESPN area, actually, and we were walking along, and a phone call came in. It was this is back in the day when we carried those heavier cell phones, you know, but the kind of the brick-looking things, and John pulled his out of his pocket, and he says, "Oh, it's Matthew," and so he answered, and Matthew, "Hey, Dad, I just finished up air assault school, and I've got my wings, and someday our wings will be together," and John often shares this story, and today, John's and Matthew's wings sit in a box with the 21 gun, the 21 shells from the 21 gun salute that Matthew was given in Iraq after his death. But there were five, the Humvee always travels with five individuals in it, and there were five men in that Humvee that day, and Matthew being the medic sat in the back on the right hand side, and there was the gunner and then the two in the front, and the gentleman to the left of Matthew. So I mentioned that three other men died actually two that day and then one the next day. But there was one survivor, and that survivor is with us today, and he is we're in contact with him, and we've just been able to see him grow and really tackle his demons, because in the earliest days he felt guilty that he was the survivor. He felt guilty because he said Matthew was such a much a better person than he was. But, you know, we've been able to meet with Brian a couple of different times and just give him big hugs and tell him that, you know, that wasn't his decision. And you know, he's here for a greater purpose, and to see him grow and become a parent. And he has his own business now and really just advocating for, you know, becoming better, a better person in life. And, you know, he suffered some, not only the emotional injuries, but some pretty significant physical injuries as well that he has overcome. And it's just been an honor to see him grow into the man that he's become. And then others from Matthew's unit, those that were very close to him and those that continue to wear bracelets in it with his name on it. Some, you know, though I don't like tattoos, some people have gone and gotten tattoos with his name on it to honor him and just to continue to talk about him on, you know, there's certain days of the year, obviously his birthday, and unfortunately that tragic day in November, you know, during military honoring periods, so Memorial Day and things of that sort. And it has just been an honor to stay in contact with them.
Well, Stacy, I could talk to you all day. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our show. So remember, folks, look up the Facebook page, look up their website, Medals, Flags, and Memories, and be in contact with Stacy there and support them in their endeavors to honor our fallen heroes. And a special thanks to all of our listeners. We are now international, so that is very exciting. And we will be back again for another Women Lead Radio show Mondays at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. It has been my pleasure to be your host today. And remember, look where you're going, not where you've been. That is the message for us all today.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business, executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.